$40 giving system.
At 9:40? Yeah. Downstairs. Okay, good evening, everybody, in person and on Zoom. I promised I would not share with either side how much are in the other venue. So for all you know, for all you know, there's hundreds on the other platform. It is a wonderful turnout. It is so wonderful to see so many people here to come out or to log on for a shir on a Tuesday night as part of this beautiful Young Israel West Hempstead YU Kollel. It is a wonderful opportunity for us to learn together. These shirim will do, scheduled right now for the 5 weeks that are part of the Kollel. We'll learn together some psychology for Dessler a little bit too. And we'll get in some beautiful ideas, some practical ideas, some ways to hopefully improve our lives. And these shirim will be recorded. They'll be put on YU Torah. If you miss them or you know someone who misses them, you can inform them that they'll be on YU Torah. And also, I'll post the sources on the screen for those who want to read along with us. Try to balance, not to read too much, but also to really get the flavor of the text that we're quoting. Ritz Hashem, over the course of these next five shirim, we'll get a sense of Rav Dessler's writings, his brilliance, and his applicability to all of our lives. So I want to start by telling you that a couple months ago, I was walking when we were living in Queens, way back in the day. A couple months ago, we were in Queens. I was walking my three-year-old girls at the time to school. And while we were walking, we passed a woman who was carrying a baby in a baby carrier. And when I first told my wife the story, I didn't know what those were called. So I said, she was carrying a baby in a knapsack. She's like, did you call social services? I said, no, what are those things? Oh, baby carrier. Okay. She's carrying a baby in a baby carrier. And the baby dropped his pacifier on the floor. So I was pushing my girls in the stroller. So I stopped and I went over and I got the pacifier and gave it back to her. And one of my kids looked at me and said, Abba, you helped her because you're a psychologist. I said, what? She said, you helped her because you're a psychologist. I said, what do you mean? And she said, you're a psychologist. You help people. People are feeling sad. You help them. You saw she was feeling sad, so you went over to help them. Okay, I'll take it. I'll take credit for that. I like to think of psychology as helping people. I like to think of it as having ways to teach us how to do chesed, how to do kindness for each other. When you think about Rav Dessler, and one of his most famous pieces, it is the Kuntres HaChesed in the first volume. Quick bio of Rav Dessler, who he was, when he lived, why exactly we're so impressed with all that he's put forth. Rav Dessler was not a psychologist. Rav Dessler was born in 1892 in Lithuania. His father was a close Talmud of the Alter of Kelm. The Alter of Kelm was one of the main Talmudim of Rav Yisrael Salanter, the great founder of the Muslim movement, who was also Rav Dessler's, I believe, great-grandfather, his mother's grandfather. So he was related and also had inherited the school of thought. Rav Dessler himself studied in the yeshiva in Kelm in Lithuania, and he married the Alter of Kelm's granddaughter. So he was connected all around. He couldn't get away from the Kelm understanding, the great Musser school of thought and the great Musser way of life, which really shaped his personality, shaped his mind into a person with a tremendous Baal Machshava, a person always thinking, depth, clarity in human nature, understanding what drives people. In the early 1940s, Rav Dessler moved to England. He was a Rosh Kollel in Gateshead. In the later years of his life, what he's perhaps typically on his bio, it says, Mashgiach Ruchani in Panovich Yeshiva. Only for the last couple of years of his life in Bnei Brak, he was a Mashgiach in Panovich Yeshiva. This sefer, which he's famous for, Mechtav Me'eliyahu, was not actually written by Rav Dessler himself. The essays inside were written by Rav Dessler, but the compilation, the putting together of these articles, these essays, was done by his students. First and foremost, Rabbi Aryeh Carmel, who not only put together these works, but also put the translation together of the Feldheim book, which is called Strive for Truth. We've heard of Strive for Truth before? Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz, I just heard this story from him on a recording. Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz said that he was involved in a geiris on a Beis Din, and a young woman walked in, a teenager, and she said she wants to convert. Hey, you're too young, you're too impressionable, let's come back in a few years. She came back in a few years, ended up converting, married a Hasidic guy, and I was a completely Shomer Torah mitzvahs. So the Beis Din asked her, what inspired you to want to become Jewish? And she said, well, I felt something was missing from my life. And one day I went to Google and just innocently just searched for the word strive for truth. I just legitimately wanted to find something. Where's the emes in the world? I wanted just to find where is something more purposeful in my life. And what came up? Strive for truth. Rabbi Aryeh Carmel's translation of Mechtav Me'eliyahu. She read it cover to cover and said, I want that. I want to be from. That's a true story Rabbi Leibowitz tells. This essay, Kuntres HaChesed, talk about psychology, teaching us how to help people, how to make people happy. I'll put the sources on the screen. Now is a good time to do that. You have the sources in front of you. This is a photocopy of several pages. hopefully over the course of the next 5 weeks, we can cover the Kuntres HaChesed together. Each week will be a self-contained topic, so you can join in any time. And you'll be able to understand, hopefully, some of the practical takeaways from each day. So Kuntres HaChesed, if you look at the bottom of the first page, page 32, it's labeled. But he writes over here, the Mechaber, the person who put the Sefer together, that this matter was very important to Reb Dessler. One of the most important things, Ha'inyan Haya Chaviv Alav Ad Ma'od. He felt that this idea was something he worked on for many, many years to put this formulation together, to really understand, to put into practical terms what it means to be a giver, what it means to be a taker, what it means to be a kind person, what is chesed all about, how can we all become better givers, how can we all do more chesed, how can we all be inspired to be better, and as we're going to see, more like our Creator. So again, we'll try to balance the reading together with sharing outside ideas. By all means, please call anything out if you have any things to add or questions. I certainly encourage. On Zoom, you're all muted, but you do have the ability to unmute yourselves. I advise you to use that wisely. I don't have mute powers for those in person, but I trust you'll help me keep anyone under control who needs to be muted, right? Okay, so let's go together. So it's Kuntres HaChesed, an essay about Chesed. Also, if you look at the subtitle, Perkei Hanosim VaHanotel, the shir was called Givers and Takers, what it means to be a giver, what it means to be a taker. And Perek Aleph, he says, Kasher bara Elokim es ha'adam, when Hashem created human beings, asahu l'nosei v'notel, he gave mankind the tremendous abilities of taking and giving. Koach anasina hu koach elyon mimidos yotzer hakol barachu. The power, the potential to give is the greatest, most divine of all traits of our Creator. Shehu merachem umeitiv v'nosei. Hashem is merciful, Hashem does good, and Hashem gives, and here's the kicker, mibli kabel davar b'tmura. God does not expect anything in return, and in fact, he says, hein lo yachsar lo klum. God doesn't lack anything. Kakasu v'im tzadakta matiten lo. If you were so righteous, if you were so able, what would you give to Hashem? Seriously, what would you give to Hashem? If you could. What do you think you have that Hashem doesn't have that you could possibly give back to him? Yankee tickets. He has a pretty good view from the blimp up in the sky. Raksha Adim Abiyim Loes Todaseinu, we present to him our gratitude. Asher Zesh Shoresh Avodaseinu Lo. All of our mitzvos, all of our avodas Hashem is rooted in this idea of showing gratitude for all that he does for us. So Hashem is a meitiv, Hashem is a giver. Hashem gives not because he expects anything in return, not that we ever could give anything to Hashem in return. Hashem gives because that is his nature. Hashem is a giver, a doer, a kindness being. The kacha asa es ha'adam, and that is how Hashem made us as well. Kakasuv, b'tzelem elokim asa es ha'adam. God created man in his image. Many ask, what does that mean in his image? God doesn't have an image. So Sforno says maybe it means God gave us free will, the ability to make choices. We're outside of God's direct control. That's a godly ability. Rav Dessler is saying, ki yuchal l'rachem l'hetev l'item. What does it mean to be tzelem elokim? That we have within us a kernel of this ability of Hashem to be a giver. We have that power of being a nosein. Aval koach anetila, but we also have this power of taking. Hu asher yis'ave ha'adam l'mshoch elav as kol haba b'tchumo. Person to grab and to seize whatever he can get his hands on. Koach zehu asher yikra'u b'ni adam. I love this. Ahavas atzmo. I love this formulation of loving. When he says, what does it mean to be a taker? It means to really, really be generous toward yourself. To really have an outlook on life that says, it's all about me. What can I take for myself? Hu sharesh kol haros, he identifies that as the root of all evil midos, all evil things in the world. And he gives examples. The next example he gives about people who steal. Obviously, people who steal are takers. People who are stealing or taking things without the knowledge of the owner are people who swindle other people, take advantage of other people. Skip down to the paragraph, Haklaliyim. He says people are takers on a global level. Osei ha-mochamos, people who start wars to conquer land. Rotzei amim, mass murderers. Ve'ein shofei lama ba'adam, no human being can keep them in check. Zulas ha-kel yisparach levada, they're only answering to God. It's amazing. I wouldn't have thought to put a dictator in the category of a taker. Seems like a person who's just motivated by power, motivated by greed, motivated by dominance. But if you think about it, it's about taking control, having the control, not listening to anybody else's ideas. Everything, he's going to say soon, everything can fit into the categories of taking or giving. People who wreak havoc on the world, people who do terrible things, people who are committing atrocities across the globe, that's all coming from the koach of taking. What's in it for me? How can I advance my life and my control further? V'apratiyim, asher miyachidim yigzalu, people who take not on a mass scale, but take from individuals. Hey, asher samu lahem b'nei adam shoftim l'anisham, people try to keep that in check by having a law and order system. L'man hinatzal mirishasam, to be have some kind of reprieve from their evil acts. V'od yilamdu das ha'sa'am l'hargish, we're on the next page now, page 33. They also try to create a society where the norm is people should be well-behaved. Gam ki yivosh ha'adam me'asos avil. It should be a culture where people are embarrassed to do bad things. It should be that people are kept in check. We want to stop people from being takers and stealing. So what do? They're scared. They run the red light, look around. Did someone see? Now there's cameras everywhere, so there's always someone watching. It says, avil shoresh hara shu koach hanatila odena b'makomo yamod. Even if a person doesn't steal, or a person doesn't abuse someone else because he's being watched by the cameras, by the police, he's afraid of being thrown in jail. The underlying root of evil, the underlying root of being a person who's a taker, being a person who wants more for themselves, that's still there. I think of it, I had a teacher who always kept the class under control very, very well when he was in the classroom. Stepped out for 1 minute. Paper airplanes were flying everywhere. There's spitballs. The people were dangling from the chandelier. We didn't have a chandelier. But they made a chandelier, and they were dangling from the chandeliers. Everyone was so exciting because he walked out for a second. So, which proved, when he was in the classroom, he didn't squash the fun out of us. Hope he's not watching now. But he wasn't, like, turning off our ability to have fun or want to be wild. It was temporarily in check, but the second he turned around, the second he walked out of the classroom, that wasn't even so bad. He was out of the classroom early. Some teachers, they turn around to the blackboard for a second, and then everything breaks loose. But the idea is the underlying mitos, the underlying tendency of being a taker, can be held in check as long as there are laws. A person is scared of getting in trouble, but the underlying mitos is still there. V'al Kain, he says, don't trust a person and his civility, because under that garb, under the great kind person who follows all the rules, says please and thank you, you may really have a person who, if he could, would bite your head off. He quotes in Pirkei Avos, the last line of the first paragraph, Ilamale Morasha Malchus Ish Esrei Eyu Chayam Bela'o. A very harrowing image. If not for the teacher, not for the government in charge, men would eat each other alive. So, pretty daunting thing to start off with, right? So, we're all great people. By the way, underneath all of us, there's this. Doesn't sound like it, right? At our core, each of us has the potential to be a, to be a giver, and we also have this beast within us of potentially being a taker.
He gave us the attribute of giving. He must have also had the attribute of taking.
Right.
How does it manifest itself with Ribono Shel Olam?
Yeah, I'll repeat the question for those who are on Zoom. The question was asked, if really we're Tzalam Elokim, so then does Hashem also have this element of Netila within him that we're somehow emulating, somehow taking from him? I don't know. The best thing I could think of to say is that Hashem has this dominance in him. He is Melo Kol Haaretz Kevodo. He is Melech Malchei Hamelachim. He does have that power. He does have that supreme authority. So maybe man inherits from that this desire to conquer, this desire to be in charge. Maybe that's what it comes from. I don't know. It's definitely a very good question.
Like darkness is just the absence of light. Maybe evil is the absence of good.
So maybe another suggestion is that maybe Hashem doesn't have any of these elements within him, but if one does not emulate the ways of Hashem, then the absence of that giving, which is Hashem's quality, would be this evil, dark netila. I like it. Skip down to halfway through the second paragraph where it's underlined. He says, Shnei hakochos ha'ela, these two powers, these two forces, hanasina, vanatila, giving and taking, heim shrashe kol amidos v'chol amas, and they are the root of everything. Everything. He says everything can be traced back, like we said before, everything can be traced back to either a form of giving or a form of taking. The yesh l'chol adas says you have to keep in mind, she'ein derech m'muta b'zeh, there is no middle path. There is no middle ground. Skeptical? Me also. There you go. When it comes to giving, he's telling us there's no middle path. Now there might be times where we'll see in a second there's times to be a taker in some respect. So maybe that's the middle path of sometimes taking. But in terms of midos, in terms of he's saying you're either doing an action that's closer to giving or an action closer to taking, and there's no action that can be classified as a giving and taking act. But he says, "Ki nefesh ha'adam la'olam tishof la'echad mishnei hatzadim." One is always striving for one of the two sides. Uvetshukas ha'leiv ha'pnimis ein pashrus. When it comes to the inner workings of psychology, there is no middle path. There is no balance. There is no possibility of doing both at the same time. One is either doing one or the other. You know, recently on Gimel Tammuz, people were sharing this around. Maybe some of you have seen this as well. But Lubavitch Rebbe, that Rabbi Jonathan Sacks wrote that when he visited the Lubavitch Rebbe back in 1968, the Hasidim told him the following story of a person who wrote a letter to the Lubavitch Rebbe. And the letter went something like this. The person wrote to the Lubavitch Rebbe, "I am depressed. I am lonely. I feel that my life is meaningless. I try to pray, but the words do not come. I keep mitzvahs, but find no peace of mind. I need the Rebbe's help." Rabbi Jonathan Sacks says he was told by the Hasidim that the Rebbe sent back a brilliant reply without writing a single word. The Rebbe just circled in the person's letter the first word of every sentence. I. I'm depressed. I'm lonely. I need something more. I need help. What does that mean? The person has an attitude of, me, I'm suffering. I'm struggling. Well, no wonder you're depressed. You don't have enough. You're lacking. You're lonely. You're failing in your mitzvahs. You need help. It's okay to need help. It's okay to reach out for support. But not anywhere in this discussion is about anyone else in this person's life. Deaths are said mutually exclusive. Studies have actually shown that when it comes to treating depression, one of the behavioral tactics is actually to help people focus on giving. When you're focused on helping other people...
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah, just in 1 second. When you're focused on giving to other people, when you're focused on sharing with others, it takes a focus off yourself. It takes a focus off my own life being depressing or I'm not accomplishing anything. When you share with others, when you give to other people, that is the opposite of I. It takes a focus off the depression, off the loneliness. Yes, Bob.
It says vayikhu li truma. So there, don't you have a blend of the taking and the giving? And I know there are a lot of, you know, perushim on that.
Right.
About first you take and then you give.
Right.
That kind of a thing.
You're saying even Hashem is a taker in the sense that he asks for donations. And it's funny because you don't usually take donations unless you're a bad person. Right? Usually you give donations, right? So you're pointing out that Hashem does have an element of taking, but it's blended, even itself is blended within about an aspect of giving and generosity. Am I understanding correctly?
Yes.
Beautiful. I think that's a great source. Absolutely.
It doesn't say the Yichu Truma Li. It says the Yichu Li Truma. How do you get Li?
Uh-huh.
By giving Truma.
Beautiful. I'll just share it for the Zoomers. We have boomers and Zoomers, and also people of all ages, I'm assuming. But the idea was beautifully shared, the idea that Hashem is saying, you can acquire me, the way to have a relationship with Hashem is to give to the Mikdash. That is our way of connecting with Hashem. So Dessler is telling us in the beginning this idea of understanding the psychology of what it means to be a giver, what it means to be a taker. These are two opposing forces. The force of giving is something directly from Hashem, something Hashem is... His essence is all about, it is our Tzal Malokim that taps into that, and perhaps it's the absence of that connecting Tzal Malokim that is what the force of taking is. But then, in chapter number 2, yes?
I beg to differ somewhere, unless you want to say here, that it's not really related to regular business.
Oh, you are right on the ball. Paragraph number 2, business. Seriously.
Okay. Because I think of it this way, that normally every transaction, giving money and you're getting back a service. So you're kind of saying, you know, you're giving a certain amount to get what you're supposed to get back. So it's kind of going towards the middle, you know, whether you're buying a house, you're getting a house and you're paying money. So to me, you're kind of going towards the middle, but yet you're saying everybody's either a giver on one side or a taker on the other side.
Because every action is either leading one toward more being a giver and a taker. Each person has elements of both. Every action a person does is a step toward a giver or a taker. You're asking that the normal business method has transactions, right? Transactional life. The name of the second chapter is Masa Umata, business. He says, many are probably wondering, and in fact, many were wondering this very question, in business, in life, how could you tell me, he says, on the first line, Atem Omrim She'ach HaNasina Hitola, you're telling me only giving is good.
Before we move on, I think I have another comment that I'd like to share.
Yes.
There's also the idea of being a gracious receiver, not just a gracious giver. And when we can accept the gifts or the chesed or whatever of another, that makes them feel better. So if we are going to emulate Hashem as a taker, I think it may be that we are emulating Hashem as a gracious taker. We offer him gifts. He doesn't need the gifts.
Right.
But this is our way of connecting, and therefore he allows himself to take the gift.
That's beautiful. That would tie back to what we were talking about before. But what does it mean that to be a taker like Hashem? Maybe it means to allow, like a Mishkan, right? Mishkan is a house for Hashem, but not really a house for Hashem. It's really Li, right? To allow us to have a relationship with Hashem. He gives of himself when he accepts our gift. It's a bracha for us to be able to give to him. So you're saying we can emulate in the taking department as well, making relationships with people, making people feel good and wanted and needed. Absolutely. Yes. Excellent. Beautiful. So in Perek Beis, he talks about the business world, and he says, you're going to tell me that only giving is good and all taking is bad? He says, how could that be? The world can't function. Everyone's always going to be giving, giving, giving. Where is there ever give and take? Where are we ever going to have an opportunity to live a life? In the second paragraph there, the last paragraph on the page, he says that this is the way of life, that there really are different styles of giving and taking, which really kind of brings together what we're talking about. The act of giving and taking don't necessarily spell one for doom or disaster. Because there could be people who are taking, but in the process, like you said, they're setting people up to be able to give more next time, or to be able to be part of society, or to have a balanced life, or be able to create a society where people have things. If everyone just threw everything into the middle and walked away and was, you know, penniless, would that be a better, kinder society? Not necessarily, right? But he explains exactly what he means, and he says that he's talking about the underlying kavana that people have. And here in the last paragraph, he says that there are people, here in the last paragraph, ki gam be'ela shnei minim hema, yesh asher yitlu harbe, there are people who take a lot, v'ach ma'at yitnu, their role in society is mainly takers, and they give a little bit. Their whole purpose in business is just to make profit. Without even thinking, he says, if all the time what they're expending to make this profit is even worthwhile. Maybe they're taking out ridiculous loans, and then they look back and they say, why'd I take out $400,000 in loans to make a job that pays $70,000 a year? Oh, that's a good question. This is going to end in 10 minutes. Okay. I didn't realize this was a Zoom that we... Can everyone just sign back in if we get signed out? Okay? Yes. Everyone who gets signed out by the Zoom should sign back in. And then we'll work on upgrading the account. Yes? Everyone sign back in after. Okay. We'll get the shul account for next time, but everyone please sign back in 10 minutes after you get closed out. So he says that people who are so focused on taking, even when they give, if you look at the next page 34, he sums it up. On page 34, he says, "Gam ha'ma'ad asher yitnu." Even the times that they are giving, "Ein sharasha b'tov." They're not really trying to do something good. B'koach anasina, ach mimakor rayabia. B'koach anatila. Sometimes even an act of giving could truly come from a koach of taking. Halakol sheyifasam amachshav oseyam b'natila yidbaku. Even their acts of giving are rooted and connected with this idea of advancing themselves, of profiting, of taking more. Whatever they sell for, they're looking to get back double. That's what he says in this competition. A person always looking to get ahead. Every favor, even when he gives, he's always looking to get ahead. It reminds me of that story they say about a doctor who was constantly asked for medical opinions at parties. People come over, doctor, you look at this rash, doctor had this ache, doctor had this problem, and WebMD, Hagayin WebMD says this and this. Can you please help me, doctor? Can you look at this? The doctor was very frustrated. He couldn't go to a party without being bombarded by people asking him for free medical advice. So he went over to his friend, the lawyer, who was at the party also, and he said, do you also have the same issue going on? And the lawyer says, yeah, let me tell you how I solve this problem. People come over, they ask me for legal advice, and I send them a bill after our conversation. And then I feel like I'm properly compensated. Doctor thinks it's a great idea. So he goes home that night and writes a bill for all those at the party who came over to him. Next morning, he goes to his mailbox to put it in, to mail him out, and he finds a bill from the lawyer. Any advice that you give is always an opportunity to be a taker, right? Even when it looks like you're giving, even when it looks like you're in a koach anasina mode, a free, friendly advice, sometimes there's always a taking mentality that's possible as there as well. And in this way, what he says in the next paragraph, Oh, yesh ra'agid olam b'cha'ela, still on page 34, when a person is drawn completely with an attitude of a dog-eat-dog world where he's trying to take and beat out someone else, there's a lot of competition. The person is trying to take as much as he can for himself. I think this is so critical. He mentioned before that sometimes society is kept in check because of social standards, because it looks bad. No one wants to be a jerk. No one wants to be obnoxious. No one wants to be seen as just a rude, horrible person. In business, being competitive doesn't make you a horrible person. You know what it makes you? A successful business person. So if what's keeping this koach anatila in check, what's keeping this unending force of taking in check is that society looks down upon people who steal, well, then being in a dog-eat-dog world and trying to get ahead in your career and trying to step on people and take advantage of hours and hire the cheapest labor and put forward the best product that you have to, and then making all the profits for yourself, that's not looked down upon in society. It's called capitalism, right? Not against capitalism, but he's saying that this idea is actually something not kept in check. He says, Aval ha'im ein ha'hischaros mevi'a lidei tzar v'yesur and harbe. Doesn't competition, doesn't this dog-eat-dog world lead to so much trouble, so much pain, so much anxiety, so much depression? V'gam lefameim lidei chala'im ra'im u'misa keduma. Actual health concerns, somatic symptoms. A person could be very ill living in a world. Just pause for a second and just ask yourself how much of our desires are rooted in what society says we have to do, or what our neighborhoods, or what our competition. It doesn't have to mean our competitive business partner or business across the street. Just life standards of a community. The cars, the houses, amenities, vacations. How much of that are things that we want? Probably some. And how much of that is just driven by this sense of, I can't be left behind. I can't be the only one who doesn't have this. I can't be the only one who's not going here, or the only one who's not buying this, or has three of these. It's a way to think about it. It's almost like everything could be traced back to giving and taking in some way or another. Right? You think going to work and making a job and supporting your family is a wonderful thing. And it is. Absolutely. Who's going to put that down? Obviously not. But how much of what we're driven to do and the unhappiness that we feel is based on this sense of, I need more so I can take, so I can feel a sense of grandeur. Right? If dictatorship and mass murderers are also driven by a sense of taking because it's taking power and taking satisfaction, how much in our own basic lives, not as mass murderers, is also based on that sense of self-respect, which is a wonderful, viable trait, but how much of it is self-respect based on what everyone else is doing and this dog-eat-dog world? So business is important, right? Business having a sense of giving and taking, being involved, but he's saying that even people who sometimes are in the process of giving, who are in the process of, looks like they're contributing to society, they're a store owner, they're giving merchandise out, they're helping people, they're giving out ice cream, they're giving out sarim, so they're contributing to the world. But what if when they're giving, their kavana is only to take more for themselves? And the reality is, you can't look at an act and say, that's evil, because a person's intention could be different. One person could be in a business, and we're about to see in the next paragraph, next chapter, that it's the intentionality behind it. A person could be involved in an act, a lifestyle of giving, and even when he's taking, he's really just gathering up resources to be able to give to other people. And someone else could be seemingly giving out stuff, giving out sfarim, giving over shirim. Maybe he's only interested in himself. Possible. Likely. Right? It's all about a mindset. It's all about, what is our focus? Are we looking to be more godly, more divine, more generous, more giving, more selfless? Or are we looking to take more, looking to have more for ourselves, looking to have an imbalance and to beat out other people and to just not be as bad as the next person, just to outrun the person next to you? That's what they say. If you're in a forest and you're running away with a friend from a bear, you don't have to outrun the bear, just outrun your friend, right? As long as you outrun your friend, you won't get eaten by the bear. Our last paragraph for today, our last chapter for today in Paragimel, and again, in 3 minutes when all the Zoomers get logged off, please just come back on. In chapter 3, he gives the other side of this, what it means, hamasa v'hamata nato, what it means to be involved in business and to be involved in the world, and at the same time have an opportunity to be a giver in the process. Aval eila heima darchei tzadikim shebnei adam, the righteous people, what is their way? Nesinasam rabba v'netilasam mu'atas. Yes, they are takers sometimes. But first of all, their majority of their mindset is to give. V'gam hama'ad asher yikhu, even the times that they are taking, Muchrachim heimelbo. They just have to take to function in the world. Laman afshir lahem es hanesina v'hatava. Because if they're not able to have money to give, they can't give. I would argue, from a psychological perspective, if they're burnt out and they don't take any time for themselves to rejuvenate, to replenish, you're running on empty, you won't be able to give of your time. You won't be able to be generous. You can't be a volunteer. You can't be generous with your time if you yourself don't make time for yourself. You don't make time for your family. You don't make time for those important to you. So there's no contradiction, right? A person could spend a whole day on vacation, but with a mindset, I want to replenish myself so I can go back home after the vacation to have more energy, be involved in the community, to be involved in Talmud Torah, involved in tzedakah, involved in tzarchei chesed. It's all about a mindset. Anything could be classified as giving and taking. Even an act of handing something over could be really taking if the person's mindset is all self-serving. Even an act of taking something in or taking a vacation could be an act of giving, If a person's kavana is, I can't be a shmata, I can't be a doormat, I need to live my life in a way that's balanced and I'm replenished and live a life that's full of meaning and purpose, so that also is true, right? When we say you can classify every action as giving or taking, it doesn't have to mean in the, you know, crude or very obvious sense, right? It could just be understanding the person's focus, understanding what it is driving them, what it is that they're all about, what is it that helps them achieve in life. And he explains that. Nemtzeis Omer, we're over here, sorry if I had to scroll before, we're over here. Nemtzeis Omer, Kigan the Tilasa mi Makor Kadosh Yaasa. For people like this, even when they're taking, it's coming from a koach of giving. Mechefetz Hanasina, Lo Yigu Bera Koach Hanatila Liolamim. And they're never touching on this midah, this terrible midah of taking for themselves. Even when they look like they're doing something that's self-serving or self-care, it's really just to allow them to be better people, to allow them to continue to thrive. And over here, he gives two examples of what this means. How would it actually look? How could a person be a giver, even when he looks like he's taking and involved in his own business and involved in acquiring things for himself? So he gives two examples. I think now is a good time. I'm going to end the Zoom. Everyone, please could just sign back on, and then we'll pick up from here. I want to have a pause for a second. Just take a breather.
It shows multiple caps. Some of them only 4 minutes.
Yeah. I'm going to get those.
As a rookie, they give you
the... This is my personal account. I didn't realize it was... Everyone back in? Okay, now we get to see who was really on before and who was just leaving the camera on and walked away. I'm just joking.
How many people were on? There were 40.
Before there were 48, and they're coming back in now. Everyone's coming back? We're joining? All right. You get double schar for coming twice to the shir. Schar alicha, back to the right. You didn't have to come in person, but you'd have to sign him back twice. So everyone could decide which took more effort.
We should have left the room.
everyone, get out and come right back in. Very good. Okay, so he gives a couple of examples of people who, even when they were seemingly focused on themselves and their own business, they were actually in the process of giving as well. We'll do this Torah Shabbat Peh. So he says over here at the bottom of page 34, let me share this again. Bottom of page 34. He says, a beautiful example, he says one from recent history in his time, passed away in the 1950s, and recent first time was the Chafetz Chaim, and he says a few years before that was Chanoch. When did Chanoch live? Actually, there's actually three different Chanochs in Chumash. But Chanoch from Sefer Bereishis, from Parshas Bereishis. So we're talking
long time ago,
yeah. And he lived for 365 years. That Chanoch. So he quotes from a Medrash, a beautiful idea. In fact, one of my favorite ideas I'm sharing tonight, if you want to pick one thing to take for tonight, take this idea about Chanoch. Beautiful idea. In the last paragraph on page 34, he says, B'torah kasa v'yishale Chanoch es halokim. Chanoch lived a life of godliness with Hashem. V'yamru chazal ki Chanoch tofer min alayim haya. You know what Chanoch did for a living? He was a shoemaker. V'yalkol tfiro tfira haya miyached yichudim lekono. Every stitch he made when he was sewing those shoes together, he had yichud, he had this great connection with the divine. Now he quotes from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter that it can't possibly mean that while he was doing people's shoes, while he was actually working for people, he was thinking about the sphiros and the alamos and thinking about Kabbalah and last night's Shir Nuchta Meliyahu. No way, right? Not possible. Why? Because that's stealing. Saul Salanter was known for this attitude. People would ask him questions all the time. What kind of kavanah should I have putting on my talus for the first time? He says, not to smack the guy behind you with your tzitzis. Right? So focused on, don't be too frum. Be ethical, be righteous. Saul Salanter, founder of the Musar movement. So he says, it can't mean during the making of the shoes he was thinking about the shiurim or the spheros. It's not what it means. You know what it means? He says, the last line, Alatochen Hayichudim Shahim Yachid. What does it mean that he was having a yichud, a divine connection? On the last page now, page 35, Asher Sam Alibo Machshavaso, he was having intention, Bechol Tfira Utfira, during every stitch, Kitia Tova V'chazaka. Just like the guy with the tzitzis. Just have kavana, not to smack the guy behind you. During every stitch, have kavana, it should be a good, solid stitch, and you're not cheating the person who's buying it. The chiyu hamin alayim tovim, and the shoes should be excellent. L'man yehena mehem asher yinaleim, and a person who buys them will find great satisfaction from them. Why would the Medrash call that attaching himself to the divine? He was actually having very mundane, very practical thoughts about what he was doing in the moment. Why would the Medrash refer to that as being having yichud, having this direct connection with Hashem? Kach adibik chanoch b'midas kono, on the third line, asher yite v'yehena lezulaso, because he was having in mind to do good and to help other people. The kacha yichud lo yichudim, that was the yichud, the connection, the direct personal one-on-one he had with Hashem. Ki lo chafetz chanoch b'shum davar acher, he wasn't motivated by anything else. Zulas hachefetz ha'echad, one thing, v'asheifa hamyuchedes ledabik b'midas kono. I love this, so beautiful. What does it mean? He was having a connection to Hashem. He was having a connection to the midah of Hashem, the midah of being a giver, the midah of being someone who's completely focused on the other person. Yeah, he has to make a living. Yeah, he has to make shoes. Yeah, he's going to get paid. Yeah, he has to invest it in stocks and be able to support his family. Fine, absolutely. What he was thinking in that moment wasn't, here's how I'm going to get rich. Here's how I'm going to feed my family. That moment it was, I hope these shoes work for the customer. Very simple, very straightforward. In any business we have the opportunity during the service to think, this is making me money. And even when it's annoying and the customer is always right, but also really always wrong, and the customer's driving me crazy, I can have in mind, it pays the bills, makes a living. What kind of koach is that? It's a koach anathila. Not evil, but it's leaning more toward, I'm doing this, I'm spending 8, 9, 12, 15 hours a day, depending on your profession, I'm spending my entire day taking. How can I get more? How can I be more? How can I have more in my life? And if I don't like what I do, pays the bills, pays my vacations, pays for the construction of my house, allows me to go away on vacation to somewhere exotic. A Pesach program. That's what's funding it. Or, what Chanoch was doing the same thing. He's doing the same work, but during each stitch, he was miyache to Hashem, which means that he said, I want this to be good for the customer. Hope they enjoy these shoes. Hope they can go running every single day and go jogging and lose some weight. Hope they can have a wonderful day. That's it. No special sfiros. That's yichud with Hashem. That's a divine connection. You know why? Because you're a giver. You're connecting everything you do, whatever you do. You could be doing the same things everyone else is doing and the same things you were doing yesterday. A new perspective, a fresh perspective, the opportunity for all of us just to change our mindset and to actually become givers in everything that we do. So I wanted to share for the last few minutes that we have some ideas from more recent psychology that I think ties in so beautifully. There is an organizational psychologist named Adam Grant. Heard of Adam Grant? It's a podcast, several books. No. Adam Grant is an organizational psychologist, which means that he helps businesses instead of helping people in therapy one-on-one. He helps companies, he helps people be successful in business, find out the traits and the habits of people who are successful in business, and what it is that makes people thrive, what makes corporations thrive. One of his books is a really fantastic book, and this will allow us to bring all this down to the practical. Practically, how can we give, right? We all want to turn everything into giving right now, but like I said before, we don't want to be a shmata. We don't want to be a doormat. So what does it mean to really be a giver? So Adam Grant, who is an organizational psychologist, has studied three different categories that he has. Amazingly, he may have borrowed from Rav Dessler. Who knows? He has what's called givers, takers. He has a third category called matchers. A giver is someone who their tendency when asked to do a favor is, sure, I'd love to help. I'd love to help someone else out. A taker is someone who, whenever they're asked for a favor, always thinks, what's in it for me? Am I going to benefit from this transaction? And a matcher is somewhere in between, who I guess a matcher is someone who says, sure, I'm happy to help you. I just hope in the future this will mean you'll help me if I ever need something from you. Reciprocal type of relationship. What Rav Dessler would probably call somewhere in the category of taking for the sake of, forgiving for the sake of taking back later on. Maybe in the category of takers within Rav Dessler's world. So Adam Grant studied all types of people. He studied salespeople. He studied med students, he studied engineers, and he said, based on certain questions people answered about themselves, we were able to group people into categories of either givers, takers, and matchers. Which category of people, he says, do you think tended to be most successful? Better grades, better jobs, better opportunities. Which people do you think were most successful? So you're all saying givers because you think, like, well, I guess like I would have said takers, but like, there has to be a catch here somewhere. But there is a catch here. Yes, the givers were the ones with the highest grades. The givers were the ones with the highest success rates, best performance reviews, reviews on Yelp. They were always the ones most successful. Which category do you think were the least successful in all those areas?
Takers.
Also the givers. The givers, he found, were actually at the two ends of the spectrum. They were the most successful, and they were also the least successful. What? Well, think about it. We're saying givers are great because people love them, and they're so successful, and they're so kind, and they're so giving. People like to do business with them, and they move to the top. But as you probably would have thought coming in tonight, sometimes nice guys do finish last. It's been known to happen. If you're constantly giving, and you burn out, and you give up, and you can't make it further in med school because you've been giving your whole life, so then when was there ever time for yourself? So he says, turns out the givers are the most successful, and the givers are the least successful, and the takers and mashers fall somewhere in the middle. So he says, what separates good givers from bad givers? Which is exactly our question, right? We're focusing on how everything has a koach of giving in it, an opportunity to grow and be more like our Creator. So we want to know, what is the cutoff point? What allows a person to be a giver who is energized, who is motivated, who is kind, who is godly? And what makes a person just a doormat? Makes a person who just gives everything he has nothing left for himself. So he says that the way to differentiate between the givers who are successful and the givers who fall to the bottom, you can figure out by asking yourself three questions. Why, when, and for whom? Why, he says, it matters very much what people's motivation is for giving. They did a study where they had people write down whatever they gave, but also why they were giving. When people gave because they felt like they had to, they had no choice but to give. They owed it to someone else, or they felt that they would be ridiculed if they didn't do it, or they felt that they, by society standards, had to do it. They felt the sense of obligation, a burden, that they had to give. Those people, when they gave, they felt drained. They felt empty. They felt disadvantaged. They felt abused. But people who gave because they believed in the cause, people who felt they were contributing to something larger, people who felt that they were attaching themselves to something divine or something beautiful for the world, something larger, or for those that they care about, actually, studies found, made them more energized. They were more enthusiastic. They felt so accomplished. They felt so purposeful throughout their day. They felt like they wanted to just keep giving because it made them feel so good. In Rav Dessler's language, that's the meat of Hashem. God doesn't get burned out, and God doesn't get fed up with giving. And the reason is because God doesn't give because he has to. God doesn't have to do anything. God gives because he's a meitiv. He's a merachim. He's a nosin. Hashem gives because he wants to give. And in that sense, it's not draining for Hashem, kiviyachol, if it could be, because for Hashem, everything is about what's right, and it feels right. Second question that proper givers ask is when? Finding the proper time to give. If we're giving all the time and it feels like we have nothing left, of course we're not going to be successful. He said a study in North Carolina found out when people did 5 acts of random kindness, or random acts of kindness, in one day, at 9 a.m. and 12 p.m. and then 3 p.m., throughout the day they felt drained. They couldn't do it anymore. They were so exhausted. But when they gave in batches, for every day at 12 o'clock, they did 5 acts of random kindness. Smiled at people, shared their lunch, gave out a snack to someone, but in bunches. They designated time that was for themselves, and they put aside time that was for giving, for volunteering, for helping people out. When was focused on certain times, allowing relaxation for themselves, taking care of themselves, in order to rejuvenate themselves, when they gave, they felt so wonderful. They felt so fantastic. And the last question they ask is for whom? Adam Grant says when people give to takers mostly, they feel very worn out. They feel like they're constantly being taken advantage of. People come over and they smile and they act like they're looking out for you, but you could tell you're just another person that they're taking advantage of before they move on to the next person, the next sucker to take advantage of. He says, how can you tell who takers are? Because they can be very friendly and very charming. So this is his language. He says that the takers tend to kiss up and kick down. For people who are better than them, they always act so proper and they always act like they're so generous and want to help. But for anyone who's beneath them in the company, they kick down. They're dismissive, condescending, like a vulture. Sees an opportunity, he grabs it, but then for someone else, I don't have time for you. He says the person who gives all of his time is found giving to all the takers in the company and in their environment can really drain a person. So giving gives us a power, an opportunity to be able to be generous, to be like our Creator, to be godly, to be divine, to be able to turn all of our actions into focus, even the times that we're taking, even when we're making those stitches in our shoes. It's an opportunity for us to look back and say, how can I contribute? How can I be a giver? How can I be someone who is energized and motivated? If we ask these questions, why am I giving? Am I really motivated to do so? What am I giving? Am I giving at specific times, making sure to have time to regenerate and allow myself to recuperate? And also, for whom? Am I giving to people who give me a sense that I'm doing something good for the world, I'm actually taking advantage, that is the kind of thing that creates a person to a nosing, to a person who enjoys to keep giving, who finds fulfillment in giving, and really can turn all of his actions into giving. So we're off to a great start, both in terms of in person and in Zoom. I'm so happy everyone was able to give of their time. I'll take it. To be able to come here tonight, to be able to start this series. Rich, next week we'll talk about the next step of this, which is about love. He transitions from here to talking about love, how we can actually create more love.